For the past 16 years, Dr. Carl Patton has dedicated his life to transforming what was perceived as a commuter school, founded in 1913, into a traditional urban research university. Leading by example, Dr. Patton and his wife asked that the president's home in Buckhead be sold so that they can move downtown to a loft overlooking Woodruff Park with a bird's eye view of the Georgia State University campus. In 1997, Patton launched the Main Street Master Plan, expanding the university's footprint. This plan included many projects, such as the renovation of the Rialto, building a state-of-the-art student recreation center, creating university housing, the Adderhold Learning Center, and a complete transformation of the university library. Under Dr. Patton's leadership, GSU has become the Southeast's leading urban research university, with 27,000 students coming from 160 different countries, every state in the nation, and every single county in Georgia. It's the second largest university in the state. GSU has become such a vital part of downtown that Central Atlanta Progress recently honored Dr. Patton with the Dan Sweat Award, an award given to those who go well beyond the scope of their position. Dr. Patton will retire from the university on June 30th, but he plans to be on hand for the GSU Panthers' first football game in the Georgia Dome in the fall of 2010. The Atlanta Press Club has invited him here today because we would like to hear his oral dissertation on what he's learned after 16 years as president of Georgia State. Please welcome Dr. Carl Patton.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is great to be here. Thank you for inviting me and appreciate the sponsorships here. I'm going to give you a quiz during this. So part of this is a test of how good your memory is, because some of the answers have already been given to you during Mark's introduction. When I came to Georgia State 16 years ago, I wanted to accomplish three things. I wanted to develop a plan for campus growth. Remember, we were a small little college then. I wanted to raise money for scholarships, faculty endowments, and facilities. And the third thing I wanted to do was to make Georgia State a destination university. And thanks to many of you in this room, we've accomplished those tasks. Now, today, talking to you, I want to accomplish three things. One, I'm going to try to convince you that Atlanta is a college town. Second, I'm going to give you something to worry about, keep you from sleeping well tonight. And the third thing is I want to provide you a little insight into today's students. But let me begin with an assertion. Great cities need great universities. Can you name a world-class city that doesn't have excellent colleges and universities? Silence. That's right, you can't. So what about Atlanta? Most people don't think of Atlanta as a college town, do they? They know us for other things. Well, here's where you take out your number two pencils, because I'm going to use some data from an Atlanta Regional Council for Higher Education survey, and I'm going to use that data so perhaps I can encourage you to think a little bit differently about Atlanta. And since you are the opinion makers here, this is important information for you to remember. So here we go. Now, by the way, this data comes from the Atlanta Regional Council for Higher Education. The reason I stumbled over that is we always call it ARCH. I never have to say out loud what ARCH means. Atlanta Regional Council for Higher Education. And Mike Gerber, who is our president, is here today somewhere in the room. And I'm going to use some of his data, but he's got even newer data to come out that make what I have to say today, if I had the new data, would probably be even more startling. Let me ask you first. You got your number two pencils out? Okay, you always carry them. I know you got them. Do you have any idea how many full-time college students there are in Metro Atlanta? Full-time college students. Anyone make a guess? 50,000? 60,000? 200? Not 200,000. Sam, you know, this is the chamber right here. You can see why Sam's a great chamber director, you know? 140,000. Okay, there are 140,000 full-time, not talking about part-timers, 140,000 full-time students here. And by the way, the colleges here in Metro Atlanta confer 30,000 degrees each year. Everybody likes their team to be in the top 10, right? And that's the ranking for our colleges and universities. Atlanta ranks sixth nationally in total degrees awarded each year. And in the top 10 nationally. Now, this is the top 10, not top 10%, but top 10. Top 10 in the number of degrees conferred each year in engineering, computer science, mathematics, health sciences, business, biological sciences, and education. Pretty impressive. All of those in the top 10. And where do you think our colleges and universities rank nationally in terms of total research expenditures? As the metro area, we rank fourth of all metro areas in the nation with $731 million annually in research expenditures from our colleges and universities. I think the data show that Atlanta is a leader, a national leader in higher education. But unfortunately, higher education is not what most people associate with Atlanta. It's simply hard to change people's impression. These data have been changing over the years, but people's impressions have not kept up with the change in the data. And unfortunately, the same thing is the case with Georgia State. Some people, maybe not you in this room, but some people still think of Georgia State as a small downtown commuter school. Now, I know you got your number two pencils out. I saw a couple of you waving them around before. So here's some additional data. Now, you've heard some of this before. This is to see how smart you are. I do test every club I speak before, and I was told you were the smartest one in town. So here, your reputation's on the line. Okay. Now, the Georgia State table can't answer these questions, okay? How many students are seeking degrees at Georgia State? These are students enrolled, full and part-time students, enrolled for degrees at Georgia State. What do you think that number is? 27,000, 28,000? That's not correct. 40,000? There are actually 50,000 students, full and part-time, seeking degrees at Georgia State. How many are on our campus every semester? Now, here's Niles. That's the one you got. Niles said 27,000. We're growing so fast, even as close as he is to the university, it's now 28,000. Today, there are 28,000 students on our campus. And by the way, at night, when you're at home having dinner, kicking back, having a cocktail, having dinner, there are 8,000 poor souls going to be on our campus. Just think about that. Well, where do the students come from? Let me ask it this way. How many counties in Georgia send students to Georgia State? 159. You were good students. You did listen. How many states send us students? 50. You got that right. And how many other countries send us students? You didn't listen on that one. You knew the counties. You always know there are 159 counties. You knew that. 50 states. 160 countries send students to Georgia State. Students vote with their feet. That should be impressive to you, that 160 countries send us students. So these students can choose any of the 4,000 colleges and universities in this nation. 160 countries are sending us students. Let's talk about dollars. What's Georgia State's direct daily economic impact on the state's economy? I'm not going to talk multiplier effect. This is the actual dollars every day we spend, we pay on salaries, we pump into the economy on things that are bought, goods that are sold, right on through Georgia State. How many dollars a day do you think we pump into the economy? Directly. Somebody guess. No, you're working on the multiplier effect, Paula. That's right. What she gave was a correct answer for, if you add all the multiplier effects in, it's $7 million. But the direct dollar impact is $3 million. But because of the multiplier effect that economists use, that goes to $7 million. So remember, every day we pump $3 million into the economy, or a multiplier effect of $7 million a day. Where does this money come from? How is higher education funded? Let's look at the operating budget. The dollars that turn on the lights, put faculty in the classroom, and flush the toilets. That's our operating budget. Let me ask you this way. What percentage of that budget do you think comes from the state? Go on, class, speak up. 17, well, Niles, you're pretty good, but it's not quite that low yet. Right now, about 30% of our operating budget comes from the state. So 70% has to come from other sources, students, things we sell, endowment money, money we raise. Let's look at the capital budget. The architects in this room are interested in this budget, the budget for building our buildings. Now, since I've arrived at Georgia State, we renovated or constructed a dozen buildings. And this amount of construction resulted in $500 million worth of investment. So $500 million investment over the past 16 years. Where's this money come from? Let me ask you this way. How much of that money do you think came from the state? How much of our construction budget? How much of that $500 million came from the state? Percentage-wise, what do you think? 10%. Sam's good. Chamber, That's good. Chambers out there fighting for us, saying we know that. 10%. So where's the rest of the money come from? Well, the rest comes from donors, from students who pay housing fees and so forth. But only 10% comes from the state. You were given in the introduction a rundown of some of the projects. And back in the FAPE period between 95 and 97, we unveiled our 10-year $500 million master plan. And by the way, we have completed every project on that, thanks to a number of the people in this room. We did the Rialto Theater, the Student Center, the Rec Center, Adderhold Lofts, the Library, University Lofts, the Commons. We did quite a few projects there. But we now have another 10-year master plan going forward over the next decade, and that's going to even have a greater impact on downtown. This is a $1 billion construction project plan. I saw all the architects and developers' eyes light up here. $1 billion over the next decade. This is going to include Science Park, Freshman Residence Hall, Greek Housing. Can you believe it? Georgia State is building fraternity and sorority housing. Business and Law Professional Education Center, Humanities Building, just to name some of the projects on there. By the way, the Science Park, the Greek Housing, and the Freshman Residence Hall are already underway. So, even more than buildings, though, what does Georgia State mean to downtown? Let me ask it another way. Why should you love our students? One obvious answer is that they pump a lot of money into the economy, but there are many other important reasons. One of them I would give you is the amount of volunteer service that these students do. But even more than that, I think the reason you should love our students is because they are a part of the city. They bring life and vitality to the city. When I came to Atlanta, I saw, of course, a city with great opportunity, but a city that needed a heart. Needed people living downtown. It needed nightlife. And I think when someone writes the history, they will say that to a great extent, Georgia State kept the lights on downtown. Certainly with the renovation of the Rialto Theater, that could be seen as a starting point for our keeping the lights on. And we showed that downtown development could be successful, and frankly, then other people joined us in the redevelopment of downtown. Georgia State is not just in the heart of Atlanta. I think in many respects, we are the heart of Atlanta. And I say that because I'd like you to think about what would happen if Georgia State disappeared. Let me talk on the money side again. Sometimes I do get criticized for all my comments going back to money. We get excited about the Super Bowl coming to town because of the economic impact. But if you take those numbers I gave you before, just think about it. Georgia State pumps the economic equivalent of a Super Bowl into the economy every couple months. And we're just one of the universities in this town. Dollars, as I said, definitely count, but I'm going to give you a couple volunteer examples that show why we take seriously being a part of the city. Our students and faculty have worked with hundreds of grandparents who are raising their own grandchildren. This is through a project we call Project Healthy Grandparents, and this project has benefited more than 1,200 Georgia children, most of them who were neglected or abandoned by their parents. And keeping these children with the grandparents, keeping them in the family, and that's what Project Healthy Grandparents does, has kept these children off of state support, and that project alone over the last decade has saved the state $19 million. This is a volunteer project at Georgia State. I'll give you another example. The Georgia Innocence Project was co-founded 15 years ago by a Georgia State College of Law alumnus. And this project uses DNA testing to help exonerate people wrongly imprisoned. And last year, you may have read about this, I know some of you in here, in fact, published this, Georgia State law student Cliff Williams was an intern with this program, and he led the effort to free a man who had been in jail for 22 years for a crime he didn't commit. Cliff did it a second time, just a few months ago, with work that he did. Cliff freed a man that was in prison for almost 30 years. Just think about that as an impact of student volunteer work. So we talk about impact of Georgia State, impact of the other universities. We talk about the dollars, but we also have the value of those indirect expenditures, volunteer student labor. If you multiply Georgia State by the 20 colleges and universities in the land, I think you get some idea of the impact of your universities on the quality of life in Metro Atlanta. But what if this were to dry up? What if the educational pipeline went dry? We're already seeing a pipeline issue in so-called STEM fields. STEM means science, technology, engineering, and math. The number of graduates in these fields has dwindled. I'm going to give you something. This is what I'm going to give you now to keep you awake at night. Georgia, our state, has a two-part STEM problem. Too few students want to study science and math in high school. And if more students wanted to study science and math, we wouldn't have the teachers to teach them. Let me talk about the first part of the problem. Too few high school students are taking rigorous science and math courses, and too few college students are majoring in science, technology, engineering, and math. Now, the second part of that problem is there are just too few people prepared to teach math, biology, chemistry, earth science, and physics. And by the way, these are high burnout fields, high dropout fields for teachers. So, got your number two pencil. This is time for yet another quiz. And it's about how serious a STEM problem we face. So here's the quiz. How many high school physics teachers did Georgia's public colleges and universities produce last year? Anybody want to guess? How many physics teachers did we? Two, three, zero. Last year we produced zero. The year before was a bumper crop year. We produced three. Last year we produced zero. How many physics teachers are we going to need? Just 2 years from now, using 2010 data, for the fall of 2010, how many physics teachers do we need beyond the ones we're producing? We're going to need, what do you think? Take a guess. 25, 50, 100? We're going to actually need 210 state data on demand for teachers that we need. 210 physics teachers by the year 2010 in order to teach the projected number of students. And this is not a guess. Those students are in the pipeline. The teachers aren't going to be there. Math. How many math teachers will we need 2 years from now? 1,740. How many did we produce last year? 131. Earth science, we'll need 240. Last year we produced one. Chemistry, we'll need 415, and we produced seven. Now if you compare production and need for all the STEM fields, we produced 571 STEM teachers, high school STEM teachers last year, and we'll need 4,545 by 2010. So how's this work? What's happening? Well, thank goodness for other states and other countries who send us high school teachers. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and make a political statement about what if we cut off even more teachers from other countries, but that's where they're coming from. They're coming from other states and other countries. We also have teachers teaching out of the field. This is not their field, but they still teach physics. How would you like them teaching your students? And what about long-term substitutes? That's another area. We have long-term substitutes. But a long-term sub's only going to last 6 months. So in that case, they're going to have two different teachers during the year. So that's how we're making up this gap right now. And this can't go on forever but there's another issue we have to face, and that's the massive retirement of math and science teachers in grades 6 to 12. So preparing more STEM teachers has to be a high priority for the state. Now, I do chair the University System Task Force on STEM, and we've begun to increase the funding for STEM teachers, but we've got a long way to go. This year, we put another $2.6 million into STEM. We did ask the governor for $10 million in the budget. We didn't get that. We were able to produce $2.6 out of other sources in the university system budget. But this is a drop in the bucket compared to what we need to spend. So we all need to worry about STEM, but some of the things I believe we're going to have to address is differential pay for STEM teachers. We're just going to have to pay them more. Differential scholarship funding. We have to probably pay students to be STEM teachers. And probably even have to pay retention bonuses for successful STEM teachers. The fact is, money talks. STEM graduates today have extremely financially rewarding careers available to them compared to high school teaching. They're being bought out from us. They're not going into the public school system. So we're going to have to do something to address that. So if you sleep well at night, I hope tonight you won't. I hope you'll worry about that for your children, for your grandchildren, for the future of the state of Georgia. So the third thing is I want to talk a little bit about college students. We continue to have the best and the brightest arrive on campus every fall. Every president you get to speak here will tell you that. It's absolutely true. If you track our SAT scores, the entering grade points, they are just increasing dramatically. These are very, very bright students. We're attracting presidential scholars. It makes it more difficult every year to select the students who are getting the presidential scholarships. The honor students, the numbers are increasing dramatically. But even these high-achieving students are dramatically different than the students who came to us as recently as a decade ago. Let me give you some of the top reasons that students today decide to go to college. And this is from a 2007 Chronicle of Higher Education study, a massive survey of students. I'm just going to give you the top four reasons. Number four, to be able to make more money. Third, to get training for a specific career. Second, to be able to get a better job. First one is to learn more about things that interest them. So three of the top four reasons have to do with making money. Number one has to do with learning, but if you really look at what the reason is, it's centered on personal interest, not on societal interest. So our students are certainly interested in making money, coming to college to be well prepared to make money, but they are somewhat interested in still giving back. Some of the other information from the survey of 270,000 college freshmen, and there's some things here we might view as positive. This probably comes as no surprise. College freshmen are discussing politics more than they have in 40 years. That's a good thing. I hope you think it's a good thing. A record proportion, 24%, call themselves conservative. But many of the students who call themselves conservative actually hold what you might call liberal views. For example, 78% of freshmen said the federal government isn't doing enough to control environmental pollution. 73% of freshmen surveyed said they support a national health care plan. Two-thirds classified helping others in difficulty as a very important goal, and 35% said the same of becoming a community leader. So we do see in our students what I believe are some very positive trends. Today, students are smart, there's no doubt about it. They're in touch with the world. But let me say also that these students are arriving on our campuses with some pretty heavy baggage. What do we see? Students are arriving on campus with serious drug and alcohol problems, with 45% of the entering freshmen admitting to binge drinking prior to going to college. They're learning to binge drink in high school and even earlier. Think of that number. 45% of our entering freshmen have engaged in binge drinking in high school. Up to 50% of students on our campus today are taking antidepressants. Depending what campus and what part of the country, those figures are ranging from 30% to 50%. And 45% of the students nationwide report being so depressed that they had difficulty functioning. Now, the truth is, at Georgia State, I'd like to tell you we've escaped all this, but we haven't escaped these trends. I'll give you one example. The number of students seeking clinical services at our counseling center has more than doubled in the past 10 years. College students today are more driven to succeed than any generation before them. But this drive has been fueled in part by what we call helicopter parents, parents who hover around our campuses. You need to talk to my student assistants who answer the telephones in my office about helicopter parents. They've long been present on campus, but we're seeing more of them and more of them with extreme behavior. Now, colleges certainly want parents to be supportive of their students. Parental presence today, though, unfortunately, often works to the detriment of their students. We have parents who call their student every day to wake him up for class. Little Carl lives in a suite. There are four of us living in Carl's suite, he and three other guys, and they take turns. Each of them has a week to clean the place. When it's Carl's turn, his mom comes and cleans his place, right? Okay. We have parents who research and type their child's papers for them, who call the professors and argue about the grades the student got. And here's a really curious one. More and more parents are now accompanying their child on job interviews. I don't know if it's ever occurred to you, but this is starting to occur across the nation. What bothers me is not that parents want to help, but the increasing lack of responsibility by some students. College should be a time for developing some responsibility, and helicopter parents are simply extending adolescence for their children. Now, having said all that, I think, nonetheless, college is a great place to be. I think that I'm thankful that I spent most of my career at a college and a university setting. Well, I told you I was going to ask you about three things, and then this is the time for the quiz, and yes, you will be graded. And I do not grade on the curve. So here, I'm going to give you three questions. I'm going to give one a yes or no question, and then a one-word answer, and a complete the sentence question, okay? A three-question quiz. The first one, yes or no. Is Atlanta a college town?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. I was told you were brilliant. I think the pressure's on now. You got an A going. What are you going to worry about tonight? STEM. Okay. And complete the sentence. Today's students are? That really wasn't the answer I was looking for. Can I try that one again? Today's students are the best and the brightest. He got it. That's correct. Give that man an A. Well, I'm sorry. When I report this back to the Rotary and the Kiwanis Clubs, I'm going to have to tell them your grade, and it wasn't a straight A. But I thank you for listening. When I came here to Georgia State, a lot of people really didn't think that Georgia State would become a leading urban research university. We wouldn't have a real campus, and we wouldn't have students who lived, worked, and played downtown. I think that most of you now understand that is the case. We have become a real university. We did accomplish our master plan, and there are a lot of people to thank, many of you in the room, also some key alums like Helen Adderhold and the late Dan Sweat, Mac Robinson, Pete Petit, Herman Russell, I know you're in the room, but a lot of folks have supported us, and many of you have told this Georgia State story. I want to thank you very much. I was asked the other day what advice I'd have for president who followed me, and I said, I'm not so bold as to give advice, but I was kept on being pressured about this, so I said, okay, I'll give you one piece of advice. Treat the media well, and they'll treat you well. And I think you have treated us well, and I want to thank you for that. There's a lot more to do at Georgia State, so I have left a little bit for the next president. We now have about 2,500 students living on campus, and we're going to triple that number over the next 10 years, so we're going to build a lot more student housing. And of course, we need more resources. We've never been able to raise enough private money at Georgia State, and we've certainly not been able to build our buildings quickly enough. So I'm leaving that for the next president, and a campaign for the next president to run, a multi-million dollar campaign. I'm not going to announce the number for that poor person, but that's certainly going to be a piece of work left for the next president. We still have some work to do. We've yet to win the Final Four, and we're going to have to go to the Rose Bowl. Now, I have learned a few lessons over the past 16 years. I want to just mention a few of these to you. I did find it's possible to work and survive six university system chancellors and three governors. Six chancellors, three governors. Not many other presidents have done that. The one thing I certainly learned here, that if there's even a hint of snow, our students are going to call and phone's going to ring off the hook when you know if we're going to close the place. And the other thing I learned, never say never to football at Georgia State. In my very first student forum, I've learned if you feed students, they will come. And we call those Panther roundtables. And the very, very first one, the very first question any student ever asked me is, when are we going to have football at Georgia State? And I was so bold as to say, not in my lifetime. I didn't realize my lifetime was going to last 16 years. So as you know, we are going to start football. We're going to have our first football game in the fall of 2010 in the Georgia Dome, and I hope you'll come there and join us. Now, there's one final lesson I'll still learn. Governor Harris told me this. He told me that when I woke up on July 1st, I would learn that I've gone from a who's who to a who's he overnight. So I'm trying to prepare for that. Let me again thank you for listening to me. Thank you for inviting me. And if there is time, a few minutes for questions, I'd be happy to take any. Yes, sir. The main source of funding was from a select number of key donors. It's interesting. It's like a pyramid. You raise most of your money from probably 50 or 60 people. But we also raise money across our alumni and our faculty and staff. Something on the order of 75-76% of our own faculty and staff give to our annual campaign. So our major contributors were certain alumni, a number of them who gave us $5-10 million gifts, but also a very broad campaign across our our faculty and staff. And what I'm going to do next, I'm going to use a line my wife used a few years ago when she retired. People would say to her, what are you going to do in retirement? And she would say, for free, what I'm now getting paid for. So I'm going to stay connected to Georgia State, continue to try to raise some money there. I have a little assignment on the Fulton DeKalb Hospital Authority, and I've told the mayor, a little assignment there. I told the mayor I'd also help her with the Beltline. So I'll stay involved in some of the projects that I've been involved in here in Atlanta. Not going away. Yes, sir. I think it's going to impact a lot of things. I think you're right. If we don't have people who can enter the field, science, technology, engineering, math, many of the technical projects and activities and support services we need are not going to be there. So I think it affects us in many, many ways. You know, you have to learn these subjects in high school in order to study them in college. That's our problem in college. We would have enough teachers, but we can't get enough prepared high school students to be able to study in those fields.
Dr. Patton, a few other questions that have been submitted on our cards here is one of them, will there be opportunities for GSU to work in partnership with the Beltline project?
Well, I've been long involved in the Beltline. I, with Barney Sims, chaired the first Beltline task force, and so I think the answer is yes, because many of our faculty and staff would be involved in that, and I will be working with the Beltline.
Another question, a recent poll rated panhandling as one of the top concerns among visitors to downtown Atlanta. How involved was GSU in that survey, and does that affect the reliability of the poll?
Well, I don't know that we were involved in that survey. I will trust the reliability of the poll, because certainly any of you can, from your own experience, say that poll is probably correct. If you were to have a room full of students and you ask them what are the big problems, believe it. They won't tell you parking is the first problem. Most college students will. They will tell you panhandling, the vagrants. Students will say, Dr. Patton, I didn't pay this money to be harassed every day downtown. So on our campus, we work very diligently to try to keep the vagrants and the panhandlers away from our students. It's a constant challenge. It's when they get off of our campus it becomes even a greater problem.
We've only got a couple minutes left, but if you don't mind,
let me pose
a couple more to you. To complete the picture of a truly livable 24-hour downtown, what are the three most important hurdles that Atlanta must still cross?
Well, one is more housing. And right now with the housing market the way it is, that's a tough one. But we have to have more people living downtown. If you think about Atlanta, it was not a city where we had people living downtown, as Chicago was or New York. So we have to create that housing. That's one. More nighttime activities. Now, the restaurants have been doing pretty well, except with the streets closed off now. Some of those restaurants are really hurting. So let me give a little commercial for the restaurants. Patronize some downtown restaurants. When the streets have been blocked off, the poor people who have now opened these restaurants are not able to have their clients come there. And it's hurting the lowest level workers, the busboys, the waiters, the guys that park the cars. Patronize the downtown restaurant. That's the second one. And the third one is more entertainment, more arts. I think it's great that Cobb now has some culture and art, but I think we need to work on increasing the number of opportunities downtown for culture, art, for other diversions, activities in the evening. The Rialto has been great. The theatrical outfit has been great. But those are the three things. It's the housing, it's the restaurants and entertainment like that, and then the Fox, patronize the Fox, patronize the Rialto, the Balzer Theater. Those are the three big things I see downtown.
And for our final question, what is the one top priority, the one major change that you would make to downtown Atlanta?
I'd do away with aggressive panhandling. That's if I could. If I had a magic wand, that's what I'd use it on.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Pleasure being here. Thank you.